The KGEZ Good Morning Show with Robin Mitchell and John Hendricks, and welcoming Congressman Ryan Zinke. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning.
Great to be with you, and I am in Washington, D.C., and it remains expectedly a mess. We're going to have to find a speaker.
Okay. Kind of give us an idea where you stand in all this. We know where Congressman Matt Rosendale has been right in the thick of it all, but you've been kind of... Well, you've been kind of laying low.
Well, this is where I am. I like rules, right? And when rules become preferences, we have problems. You know, as a SEAL, I had rules of engagement. As a football player, I had rules. And it seems like the Republican caucus doesn't have any rules. And what we're seeing is, you know, Kevin McCarthy had about 94% of Republican support. I supported Kevin McCarthy. And then when he resigned, Steve Scalise, you know, another great man, conservative, great man, he probably had 85 or 88% of the support of the caucus. And now you have a third candidate, Jim Jordan, who I also like, a friend, great American, great patriot. Geez, wrestling is like 156-1. And it looks like Jim is maybe in the 70s or low 80s. So it seems to me that as a Congress and a House, you can't circle the wagons and shoot in. You got to circle the wagons and shoot out. And this is an issue with the Republican Party. We have to get together, and greater service means just that. You got to put country, duty, honor ahead of self. And so at the end of the day, I think when there's no rules in the House, it's like a football game, John. You're running on the sidelines. You step out and say, "Hey, you're out of bounds." He said, "No, there's no rules." So there's no, you don't even have football. So there's got to be rules in the House. And look, you know, a vote is when as a representative, you vote your conscience and you vote your constituents 100%. Right, and for me, it's the Constitution. It's Montana, and I will never deviate from that. But I can tell you, when you vote for a bill's not perfect, and it's always a balance, right? But when you vote against the Republican Party and your own caucus, to me, it has to have consequences on it. And so, you know, what if you lose your committees, and then they got to explain to your caucus and your constituents, why is it you can't put a bill in? Why is it you can't get an amendment in? Why you can't serve your constituents? And if you want to put a bill in, then go over the Democrats, because that's what you're voting with. So as a former commander and, you know, a secretary, I look at it, you have to have rules, and the rules should be followed. And if you break the rules knowingly, willingly, there should be consequences. And I think that's where we're heading, to tighten up the rules so we don't have to go through a debate. And in three fine, I can tell you, gentlemen, they're great leaders, all three of them, but our country is thirsty for leadership, and we got to go back and do our job.
Well, you know, the latest surveys out indicate exactly what you're saying. We're so divided on a partisan basis that we really can't agree on anything. And it almost is to the point where it's getting deeply personal. And when that happens in the halls of Congress, it's going to be tough to make anything fly.
I've always said, you know, leadership is like rowing a boat. There's two oars, John, right? And you've heard me say this, is look, I'm the right oar. I get it. But I can tell you, I recognize there is a left oar. And in order to get through these problems, you got to use both oars as a country, and not the tips, because the tips are a lot of splash, but they don't move the boat. And as a country, as a party, you know, again, you circle the wagons, you shoot out, you don't shoot in. You can argue in and have fierce debate, but you shouldn't be shooting in the House of Representatives. There's a lot of problems that are floating around, as you recognize. I think the biggest problem upfronts the border. You know, the United States Navy is going to be in patrol out there next year. But look, we don't have a border now, and we see it in every town, every city, every county across Montana and everywhere else in this country, is we've got to fix the border. So, you know, in order to fix the border, Congress has to do their part and step up. And it's hard to step up when we don't have a speaker, that means you can't get any legislative work being done. And the other comment, John and Robin, is this, is that you can't complain that the bus is late if you're the one that's shooting at it. So, you know, on the appropriations, look, you know, we got, you know, I said on appropriations, we got the border out, we got defense out, we got our veterans out, we got foreign ops out. And when we get those appropriations out and you don't vote for the rule to get them on the floor to get them passed, then you either agree with the Biden administration's policies or you agree to give them more money. But at the end of the day, you're blowing up the very appropriation process that we all committed to do.
I wanted we've heard the arguments about Israel and Palestine and Hamas and all of that, and who has the moral right high ground. I'd like to draw from your experience, your military experience as a Navy SEAL, and talk with me about what does Israel do? Clearly, they're the ones that have got the military, they've got the armament, they're the ones that are in the driver's seat here. What do you see them doing from a military perspective, Ryan?
Well, in this war, I think the Prime Minister is exactly right. Israel is at war. And I believe we have a higher coordination. Because you have Hamas in the south with the Gaza Strip. And Hamas, you know, is able to launch thousands of rockets and have a coordinated air, land, and sea strike. And then you have Hezbollah up north, which is now moving rockets. And where is all this coordination coming from? Well, I believe you'll find, you know, consistent is it's Iran. Iran is the number one sponsor of terrorism. They both give money and resources to Hamas and Hezbollah. And they still continue to launch rockets with destruction of Israel. So, you know, you look at alliance. And I'll be critical of the Biden administration on this. Look, you gave them $6 billion, but we're finding out also there's a special envoy assigned to the U.S. State Department that may have moved tens of billions of dollars in skirted sanctions. So I think you got to draw a line on our policy. And the IDF is good, but when you start getting into urban combat and hostage rescue when you don't have the element of surprise, and the hostages are probably distributed. You know, this is very, very difficult for them. And what I would do is I would ask the Minister of Defense, you know, what resources do you need? No one has a clearer idea of what they need on the ground right now than the ground force commanders. And if they need help and assistance, I make it clear I stand with Israel on this. I'm biased, but I'll stand with Israel.
Ryan, you as a Navy SEAL are trained in hostage situations. How do you handle a situation like that where you've got hundreds of people being held hostage?
Well, you know, again, in places that I've been, in Fallujah, and so when you start going door to door for hostage rescue, the chances of you actually rescuing a hostage become diminished. Right? There's a lot of you know, when you distribute it and bombs and explosives and all the bad things that terrorists do. But, for listeners, there are no boundaries anymore with these guys. When you start decapitating children with shovels, I mean, that's where we are. So, you know, I have no doubt that the hostages will be used as leverage to the degree they can. This is what happens when you give money, In the United States case, I guess the going rate for hostages is, what, $1.2 billion? So, but it's going to be very, very difficult, and there's going to be more loss of life. There's no doubt in my mind. What the U.S. can do is we can stop our continuing support of the Iranian Islamic regime, shore up our allies, and inquire what resources now does Israel need. And by the way, you know, whether Congress meets today or tomorrow, it's not going to affect the flow of resources. And as far as, you know, you hear this about another bill, if the Senate would pick up the appropriations bill that the House got through, and that's where the avenues of support Israel is. It's not on a supplemental, another bill. It's passed what we've already done, and there's plenty of resources in there for Israel.
Okay, now I had a question, Ryan. You mentioned the decapitation of babies, and I remember hearing about these terrorist acts early on, and I heard them reported in the media, and then we got news the other day that one of the media sources was backing off of that because that information came apparently, and there, you know, videos or whatever, they couldn't even tell if that was where they were shot. So I was wondering, from your connections with the Navy SEALs, if you have independent corroboration of that.
What I heard from a commander in the IDF, it was as bad as what was reported.
Okay.
All right.
It was wholesale slaughter. So, you know, and look, you know, I've fought over in the country, you know, I trained the Israeli forces, and I go back to, I think the prime minister is exactly correct, is their war.
Ryan,
it's a tragedy, and no one applauds innocent loss of life, by the way. Nobody applauds that.
Right.
You had mentioned the border situation, and I want to take it maybe up a notch here. We've been talking about comprehensive immigration reform, going back as far as maybe 2-3 speakers of the House, and none of that discussion has ever made it to the floor of the House. And here we are with a problem on the southern border. We've got a problem on the northern border. We've got border stations on La Crosse, Montana, that are not open some of the time, some of the seasons. When are we going to take a look at the whole picture and just once and for all fix it?
You're exactly right. Let's look at where we are at just a border, right? On the southern border, we don't have a border. People come across. They say asylum. They're given a writ, basically a parole, and they're somewhere in the U.S. We could have, the numbers are staggering. The highest report I saw, which has some credibility, is somewhere in the 50 to 60 million range of illegal immigrants. All right. So then you have our northern border, and I call it the bed and breakfast border, because if you look at what people are paying for a coyote, a smuggler to take you across, you know, somewhere around $10,000, for instance, you know, you can get a visa from Canada so much easier. You know, they're almost online. You know, fly into Lethbridge, grab a little car, grab a B&B. You can fly first class into Lethbridge. You calculate it out. It costs less to come across a Canada in style than it does to wade across the Rio Grande. So, you know, our northern border is there. We have at least 175 known terrorists on the watch list that have crossed, and we have no idea who else is in this country. So we don't have a border. And immigration and people that want to come here and work, as you know, if people want to do it right, I mean, you can't even get an appointment overseas for months if you just want to come over and work or do business. Just do business on introduction to, you know, sales and imports, and just do business from country to country. So our visa, our work visa, who we have in this country, this is an enormous amount of mess, and you can't just fix one part of the engine. Yeah, and you talk about that correctly, right? Well, you fix the pistons, that's fine, but you know you got your top end, so you got to fix the entire system so it works, and I'm certainly willing and working hard on that. I think the first step is you got to shut the border down. You got to figure out, man, as a SEAL, who's here, because there are a lot of good people here, and there are a lot of bad people, John. We have a lot of really, really bad people. So you got to figure out who they're here, and then you have to have a policy in place and follow the law and policy in place. And you know, I've never seen a problem we can't fix. But we're not going to fix it unless we have the courage to ask the tough questions and make the tough decisions. because some of these decisions are going to be tougher than others. But look, you can't solve it by just, you know, in the observation deck. You got to get on the field, and you got to do the hard work.
Well, you shut down the borders, then what you do is you also cancel H-1 visas and things that are keeping the economy going, particularly the technology economy, with software engineers and computer engineers and so on that are coming to this country from overseas.
Bring it locally. Look at who powers Big Mountain or Whitefish Resort. Look who powers, you know, a lot of the jobs in the tourist industry, in the Flathead Valley. It's a visa program of some measure, and look, we got to have an economy, and you can bring it all back to local. If the system's broke, if you can't find people that are willing to work on a visa, if you can't find local folks. And you want to run a business like Big Mountain, then you got to have the labor and you know, the water slides, and there's a lot of businesses around the valley that operate that way, and in Montana.
Yeah.
So look, I agree. It is fixable, but you got to have the courage to actually get to the plate, and you can't say no about everything. You can't be for the border if you vote against it. You can't be for defense if you vote against it. And as a matter of fact, you can't be for anything if you vote no against everything. So, you know, it does take, and the art of compromise is never yield to pressure, only higher principle. And you get to the principle between the parties, and you move the ball forward. That's what we've always done as Americans.
Boy, Ryan, is always a great conversation.
Thanks.
Thanks for checking in with us this morning and bringing us up to date. And we look forward to your next visit in our studios.
Well, I surmise what's going to happen is that we'll go through three fine, wonderful candidates that are capable of being the speaker, and then we're going to have to take a step back, and we're going to have to correct the organization, the structure, so we don't allow, you know, the business to be disrupted, you know, by 4% or 2%. They're all Americans, but, you know, we got to bring the ball to the field.
All right. Ryan, thanks so much.
Have a good day, and God bless.
All right, you too.